I'm very disappointed, to be fair. I have done so much for this club, sitting on the bench. I don't know why. Seems like a club is throwing me under the bus. That's how I feel it. Someone wants me to get all the blame. I said that many times before. I had a good relationship with the manager, and out of the sudden, we don't have any relationship. I don't know why. It seems to me, how I see it, it's someone doesn't want me in the club.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Just Terry this week, no Jan, but hey, we can still do this, can't we, Terry?
Yeah, we can. We can just about manage without Jan.
Just about. We can prattle on for 2 hours, can't we? And hand out awards and then maybe do a draw in the middle of it.
Yeah, we could do, and I think, yeah, hang on a second, there's a doorbell. Yeah, no, the Fugees, they've just arrived. Yeah, they're just setting up. Give us 45 minutes, and they'll be ready for you, listeners.
Yes. Chucking a bit of Robbie Williams in there as well.
See, I did catch about 5 minutes of the draw, and it was the bit where they were doing that horrific photo opportunity with the heads of state of the host nations and Gianni. Bald FIFA guy. When I was in the hotel, I was away for the weekend, and in the hotel, switched it on just to watch a bit of the draw, and that was terrible. And I can only imagine it must have got worse.
Well, I watched very little of it. I had a good plan. I was setting up my Christmas tree while it was on, and I thought, actually, no, I don't need to watch this. I could watch it on the iPlayer. I got my phone out, set it all up on the iPlayer on there, and I just scrubbed through it. So it was almost live, and I knew it wouldn't start until about 6:30 anyway. But I accidentally hit the live button on the app, and it took me to whatever was on BBC Two at the time, and I didn't realize that I'd hit the live button, and it took me straight into the middle of a program. International listeners may not know what this is, but it's Strictly Come Dancing It Takes Two, which is the reaction show of a celebrity reality TV show called Strictly Come Dancing. Anyway, I'm not going to explain Strictly Come Dancing to you, but this show is like one of those reaction shows where they have little interviews and celebrities and someone talking about dancing. And I thought it was part of the same program. I honestly did. For a split second, I thought I was actually watching some kind of weird reaction program that BBC Two had cobbled together and put on the end of the draw. It was only then I realised that I'd hit the live button. But that's the sort of vibe, wasn't it, that the draw was giving off, wasn't it, Terry?
Well, there is always that element. It's the shiny floor element, isn't it, to these shows? They are shiny floor shows.
They are.
And Strictly, of course, is the epitome, is their very definition of a shiny floor show. And so it's understandable that tonally it might look somewhat the same, and it's an easy mistake to make. As an aside, and I know we don't want to talk about Strictly because this is not a Strictly podcast and neither of us watch Strictly, but we are in a minority because like pretty much everyone else does. Bald FIFA guy.
Yes.
He would love a turn on Strictly, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yes. Yes.
Him and his white trainers.
I can. Today, I feel like Fred Astaire. I could totally get that.
It would have to be in the same edition as Jake Humphrey as well. I personally think Jake Humphrey lobbies. Someone's going to tell me that he's already been on it. But I think he lobbies. He lobbies for I'm a Celebrity and for Strictly. His people, his high-performance people, are constantly in the ear of the bookers for those shows.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, when you brand yourself as high-performance, you can't leave yourself open to that sort of thing, because otherwise, you know, you're going to get voted out first round, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, that's the only reason why they'd be booked. I suppose, obviously, because I'm a Celebrity is somewhat different because, of course, it's got the whole punishment thing, isn't it? It's like, nice to see people being punished. The worry is that Jake Humphrey wouldn't stick around for the punishment that he'd be just got rid of because of his lack of high performance. But Infantino, I think BFG, yeah, I mean, obviously, he's a massive, massive showman. Don't rule it out, listeners. Once he's finished
Well, the show did happen on Friday, and all the balls got pulled out, didn't they? Yeah, we'll bring it back to football. Well, vaguely football somehow. And we'll talk a little bit about the draw itself, because obviously we did it a couple of weeks ago. We did it a lot more efficiently than FIFA did. And I think I did a better job of it than Rio. But, you know, you can decide that for yourself, listeners. They got Rio bloody Ferdinand. They had bloody Jermaine Genus last time. God, bloody hell. Did they get together and think, oh, who could we get that's going to be even worse this time?
There's usually someone who says, well, you know those Sound of Football guys, they're still doing it. And then Gianni goes, anyway, let's discuss, let's change it. No. What about Rio? Rio Ferdinand, let's get him on.
Yeah, either him or Salt Bae.
I mean, I'm surprised Salt Bae. I assume he's now persona non grata. Anyway, we are drifting off again. Sorry, but yes.
We are. Such is the power of a bald FIFA guy. He makes you drift off.
It's showbiz. It's showbiz. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, we are in the showbiz biz. You know, we don't talk about football anymore. We talk about showbiz.
Well, let's talk balls instead then. Let's talk about the balls that got picked out and put into England's group. England in the last group, in Group L. So the tournament will be about a week old by the time we start playing in it, won't it, Terry?
Which means what? There'll probably be about 75 odd games having been played before they get to ours. We're going to be exhausted. I'm not a massive fan of Group L as a concept. I'm not seeing any kind of powerful themes or narrative emerging from Group L. You know, I mean, Croatia, yeah. It's like, ooh, Croatia again. Yeah, it just doesn't feel like it's going to be one of the groups that captures the imagination. And it's now the last one. It's going to be the one everyone's going to be exhausted by the end of it and go, should we watch the Group L again? No, let's go to the pub.
Well, it's England with Croatia, Ghana and Panama. Now, for me, Croatia and Ghana are two teams that are past their best. Good players still, a lot of good players in there. But Ghana failed to qualify for this upcoming AFCON, didn't win a single game in their qualifying. So that shows you they're not in a great place. But they did all right in their World Cup qualifying. They won 8 out of their 10 games. They weren't the pot one side for that draw as well. That was Mali, and they managed to get the better of them. But there wasn't any real sort of standout performances in that qualification campaign, so still don't know what to expect. Still relying on the goals of Jordan Ayew at the age of 34.
Yeah, not much really more to add than that. I mean, you know, big lover of Jordan Ayew, but it's not been the most auspicious time for Ghana, and I think it's going to be a big surprise if they can overhaul either of Croatia and England. I think, obviously, I think when you talk about Croatia, you tend to perhaps think about Modric, who will still be going at that point. But that feels almost somewhat symbolic of a team that's sort of looking like it could do with maybe some kind of regeneration. I'm certain that there are players coming through, but yeah, maybe there's a bit of a heavy roller effect going on there with Croatia. But that could go either way. I mean, they could go and attack it as though it's their last hurrah and an opportunity for greatness and cause problems. Or they may wither. It may be a bridge too far for them. But we'll see. I mean, I don't think there's anything controversial about saying England are the absolute favourites to win that group. That shouldn't be a controversial thing to say at all. But of course, you would think that Croatia are the most dangerous. Now, I'm not ignoring Panama, but insofar as I'm afraid I don't know a great deal about Panama, I guess I am ignoring them. So apologies to any Panamanians or Panama-adjacent people listening to this. I am curious to see what they can do. But 48-team World Cup, one of its downsides is that the group stage might not be quite so, well, certainly for nations like England, might not be quite so perilous. It's really more about avoiding banana skins, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
For England.
Croatia, just looking at recent squads now, Luka Modric is on now 194 caps.
Wow.
Turned 40 in September, but you've also still got Ivan Perisic there, 150 caps just clocked up there. He's 36. Kramaric is still there, 34. Obviously, the only name in the Premier League, which is probably why they're a little bit unfamiliar, the Croatians still, is Gvardiol at City. He's the only one who plays in the Premier League.
Borna Sosa, maybe? I mean, he's a bench warmer for Crystal Palace. He's a good player, but he's a bench warmer.
Yeah.
Tyrek Mitchell is keeping him out the side.
You've got Kovacic as well, who's got 111 caps as well. Yeah, I still think England are comfortable in this group. And really, they should be. But what about Scotland, though? That's a tasty group that Scotland have managed to get themselves into, isn't it?
I mean, I think that the best approach for Scotland is really a kind of bring it on attitude. I got the impression from Steve Clark's reaction was a kind of, yeah, great, you know, let's have it. When you haven't qualified for such a long time for a World Cup, you're not going to be particularly well seeded. It's going to be a struggle. You're going to be going in facing some difficult teams. But, you know, Haiti aside, I think it's amazing that Haiti are there, given the circumstances and given that they don't get to play in their own stadium. That's quite a good journey that they've been on, given the difficulties that they have there. You'd think that they are probably comfortable fourth, but obviously Morocco and Brazil. Brazil, interestingly, have not been quite that to the usual standard prior to Ancelotti coming in. And so it's possible that there may be some weaknesses there. But really, that is more of an analysis in the context of can they win the World Cup rather than can they win their group? Or more pertinently, can they beat Scotland? I mean, if they don't beat Scotland, then there's a problem for Brazil, because, you know, no shade on Scotland. I mean, you'd think it through for a second and that would make sense. Morocco, of course, is the other one. I mean, Morocco semi-finalists in the last World Cup, at a point now where obviously they're hosting the AFCON, but they're going in as fairly clear favourites, I would suggest. Some proper good players there. They are, at this point, they're comfortably, I would say, the strongest African nation. And I think we will see that the last World Cup wasn't some kind of Arab-related outlier. I think that Morocco are a force in world football and only going to become more forceful over the years. So it's a really tough group, I think, for Scotland. They're going to do extremely well to come out of that. But again, you know, third place is kind of up for grabs.
Yeah.
So it's not completely out of the question. It's going to be quite a ride for them. And if they can get some change out of those two teams, then we will know what will happen, actually, to be fair. I've not seen the running order and how they will play. But, you know, I know, yeah, here we go. Any Scottish listeners are, yeah, we know, you know exactly what I'm going to say. Yeah, you'll get a point against Brazil, you'll lose narrowly to Morocco, and then you'll get beat 3-1 by Haiti.
It is the nightmare run for them because their first match is against Haiti.
Oh, they're going to lose that. 3-1. It's Costa Rica.
Younger listeners may not know this, but Iran, wasn't it? Iran in 78?
Iran in 78, Costa Rica in 1990. During a bad spell for Costa Rica, it should be said. Because it's just like 98, isn't it?
Yeah. The last time Scotland were in the same group as Brazil and Morocco was 1998, and that time they finished bottom with just 1 point. They managed to get a draw against Norway, but they lost 3-0 to Morocco then. And that was a bit more of a shock at that time, wasn't it?
It was a shock, yeah, to be fair, although I now have memories flooding back of watching that game, and I don't think that it flattered anybody, that scoreline.
No.
Morocco were well good for that, if I remember rightly. So Morocco were, yeah, like a lot of the African teams back then, they weren't considered to be quite up to that, to the same level that they are at the moment. But a lot of that, of course, is nonsense. But yeah, that was a very, very, very disappointing result. And I think a lot of Scottish fans at the time would have expected to have comfortably beaten Morocco.
The timings for games came out as well the other day. England seemed to have done all right with kickoff times. Scotland haven't, though. Their games are kicking off at some very ungodly hours. For instance, their match against Haiti is going to be kicking off at 2 a.m. UK time. That's going to be fun, isn't it, for a World Cup opener?
In England's situation, when you're regular qualifiers and, you know, you've got a big market, large demand in the UK to watch these games, you know, millions of people wanting to watch them. And then with Scotland, they don't qualify that often. They don't tend to get the same kind of considerations that England might. And that's crap. It's rubbish. But that's one of the reasons why it's always good to try and qualify for these tournaments. It's something that Scotland, they suffer from because they're not being able to qualify for these major tournaments. They don't have the respect of the organisers that other countries do. And it is officially rubbish, guys. It's absolutely rubbish. But and I would say it's one of those things. But it is one of those things. On the other side of the looking at it, it's literally in another country. So and in a very different time zone. So, you know, this kind of stuff is going to happen.
So at least we know when we've got a come up with excuses for getting to work late. So yes, filling in our war charts, we can all now get excited about the World Cup. the peaceful World Cup in North America.
Yes, and I'm sure it will be very peaceful and not even remotely controversial.
Well, it must be, because it's got the most PC guy in the world, doesn't it?
Yeah, the peace tape is real, and because we saw it.
Of course, we still have AFCON to look forward to first.
Yes.
And just to catch up on what we spoke about last week we weren't too sure how we were going to be watching it here in the UK, but Terry, it all came good, didn't it? Within a day or so of us moaning about where we can watch it.
Channel 4 came up with the goods, and hats off to them and the whole lot, which indeed is the first time that the entire tournament will be transmitted on free-to-air in the UK. The last time was the BBC, but they only transmitted a selection of matches. This is the entire tournament. I mean, we live in an age now, of course, where these channels have got lots and lots of different other channels, so they can put them on there. More 4, E4, I4, Terry 4, Back 4. They should just change one of the channels' names to Back 4.
Oh, yeah, that would be...
They should totally do
they
that.
They would, that would
as
work.
As a pop-up channel for AFCON.
Yes.
Do you know what? If they announce that tomorrow, then I know this room is bugged by Channel 4.
Yes.
I'm really, really pleased, and I congratulate Channel 4 on what was a very, very, very smart thing to do, because knowing a little bit about the way these things tend to work, I would imagine that the rights holders, a company called IMG, would have been trying to get as much money out of them as possible, and Channel 4 notoriously don't have a great deal of money, and they certainly haven't got to spend on football, so they must have done really, really well to get that deal done. And with great relief, we can watch some great football. Obviously, a lot of Premier League players in AFCON, as we know, which will be part of the attraction, but also an opportunity to see stars from all over the world playing in this tournament. And as I said, a tournament of great importance to the continent. And I can't wait for it to start.
And the first game is going to be on Sunday, the 21st of December, and it's going to be on E4. Kick off at 7 o'clock in the evening. So if you're in the UK, you can watch it on E4. And they've also got a Channel 4 YouTube channel. So many different ways to watch.
Who's playing?
It is Morocco versus Comoros. That's the opener. So yes, Scotland fans, you can have a good look at Morocco and poo your pants when you see how good they are. Oh, we love these. Oh, look at them. They're crap.
It's harsh, but
yeah, fair. And of course, it's probably going to be the best place for you if you want to see how well Mo Salah's playing, because you're not going to be seeing him in a Liverpool shirt anytime soon, are you, Terry?
Doesn't look like it. Well, it was going to have to be a fairly big about turn, I think. Someone's going to have to do a 180. You're going to see that guy playing in soon. Well, apart from he's off to the AFCON, so he won't be playing, but his last game before he goes is the Brighton game.
Supposedly so.
As we know, because he's told his parents to come and visit him. As we know, because we now know everything about Mo Salah from knowing nothing about him. We now know everything about him because he went out and he said it all.
He did say it all. That statement he made on Saturday after the 3-3 draw against Leeds, in which he did not take part, basically didn't leave anything to interpretation, did it, Terry?
No, the only thing that I think he possibly could have changed is when he said, somebody wants me out of the club, he could have said, Arne Slot wants me out of the club. He could have said that, and that would have made it even more plain. But he also said that he has no kind of meaningful relationship with the coach either. So, wow, yeah.
Yeah, but this must all have happened since April, when it was announced that he'd signed his new contract. This is something that you mentioned, I think, in our Christmas show last year, when we talked about the contract issues. I think you mentioned about that he may well have signed, but they just weren't announcing it until a later date. And that may have been the reason why there may have been knowledge of this in the industry, which is why he didn't get too much pressure coming towards the end of the season when Liverpool won their title chase. But it does make you think how things have changed so radically in the space of 7 months. I mean, I know a lot has gone on in the club in that time, but it does seem rather drastic to go from this stage when he was comfortable to sign for another 2 years to now when he really wants out, like 6 months into his new contract, and he wants to get out of the club.
Yeah, I can't believe that that's just been something that's deteriorated so quickly. it feels as though there must have been something else going on, or rather that is to say that this has been a relationship that's been slowly deteriorating. I wonder whether or not maybe the delay in signing the contract was a degree of reluctance on the club side, and maybe that reluctance might have been driven to a degree by Slot, who was looking to make some changes, who wanted to change the format and was addressing what is a very, very difficult task, and that is to tell Mo Salah that he's no longer required at the club. It could be a combination or a mishmash of all of those things. But it was certainly an extraordinary statement for him to make. I mean, if someone who is notoriously reticent to speak to the media, doesn't really give interviews, not in the English media anyway.
And then we can see why now, can't we?
yeah, because he's just got no filter whatsoever. To go out there and do something like that is obviously calculated.
Yeah.
But I don't know about you, think, Graham, but I think it's a misstep. I'm not quite sure what he's hoping to achieve, but I'm not certain he's going to achieve it. Unless, of course, it's being kicked out of the club on his backside. But I don't think that that is going to happen either. He's on £400,000 a week,
yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what his end game is on this whole thing, apart from maybe to get Arne Slot sacked, which feels like quite a big challenge for a gunner. I know he's under pressure, but blimey.
Well, Xavi Alonso might be available soon for Liverpool, so...
Yeah, I saw that, and yes, that is always a possibility. That does feel like, you know, some kind of 4D chess social media meme, which I assume is actually supposed to be ironic. I'm not altogether certain that that's the 4D chess game that they're playing here, but I suppose it's not completely out of the question. Also, when you consider the large sums of money that are going to have to be exchanged, yeah, for these kind of personnel changes, why would you orchestrate a situation like that? That is not something that you would orchestrate. Happenstance? Yeah, perhaps. That's something to think about. I read an article in The Athletic by James Pearce, who's the beat reporter for Liverpool. I was surprised at the direct criticism that he had for Salah for those remarks. I know a couple of Liverpool fans who were quite shocked that Salah would do this, would make this kind of statement. And fans being fans, as we are, we proceed on the basis that no one is bigger than the club. And it feels as though what's happened is that he said something that is damaging to the club and is damaging to their season. I know he's a legend there and he's an institution there, but you know, at the same time, he's one of many legends and institutions. I thought it was undignified and I thought it was an attack on the club, and I appreciate it was probably aimed at one person, but I don't think that's necessarily how it came out. James Pearce wouldn't have written that article if he wasn't, I mean, he will be plugged into that community, and he won't have written that article unless he was pretty certain, yeah, that there were going to be a number of people who would agree with him, because as a beat reporter, you're not going to run the risk of alienating people within your networks by writing something like that unless you're on pretty safe ground that there's a consensus about that. And I think that he's might have messed this one up. I think that the AFCON thing is well timed. That's the one thing I can say, is he's timed it quite well, because he is about to leave the country in a week or so, for about a month, hopefully.
It is difficult to say about these sort of things, because obviously we don't know what's going on inside the club. He could be the voice of many players who don't like Arne Slot. It could be that. I don't think it is. I think it's just he is making a play. He's probably been approached by someone probably in Saudi, where we all thought he was going to go, who will gladly pay him out of his contract. But yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? If he's trying to get Slot sacked, which, you know, that could happen anyway, then I don't think he's gone the right way about it. I do wonder what Newcastle fans might be thinking about this right now, considering what happened with Izak at the beginning of the season, and Liverpool fans' approach to that situation. It's not the same. Obviously, it's not the same, but it's a bit similar, isn't it?
A Palace fan made a crack about saying, well, maybe Palace should make a lowball bid for him at the start of the transfer window and then come in with an actual proper bid with only an hour or so to go before the window closed, and then see how Liverpool fans like it. There are lessons to be learned from experience, and we never learn those lessons. We never do learn those lessons, and all of us, we're all the same.
Yes.
We're just as bad as each other. Because we're always kicking downwards, aren't we? I mean, yeah, like, we're always messing around with other clubs that are beneath us, and then we don't like it. But there's only maybe one or two clubs in the world that could kind of kick Liverpool around when it comes to transfers. Like, one of those is like Real Madrid, for example.
Yeah.
and then they get really annoyed when it happens to them. And it is fun to watch because then you kind of think, well, you're getting a taste of your own medicine here.
Yes.
But that's not, I'm not sure that's really what's happening here. It's always fun to point that out. But there is clearly some kind of power play, we think, or it's as simple as the guy's not being picked. And so he's just kicking up a big stink because he's not being picked and he's not being grown up about it. And, you know, players can be like that sometimes. Mm. They'll talk a load of things about how much they love the club. They kiss the badge. They point to it. You know, they'll do the whole Humba thing with the fans after and say how much they love the club and they love playing for it. But the moment they're dropped, they just get the arse and they don't care. And maybe that's all it is. He's just being a spoilt brat because he's been dropped.
Yeah, I think he's misread how the fans will react to this as well, because I think a lot of the fans who were as clueless about his contract situation up till April were almost ready to let him go. And they were saying, right, okay, he's won us the title. He's had an amazing career. If he wants to go to Saudi, then fine. And almost when he re-signed his contract, a lot of them were saying, oh, okay, great, we get him for another year. And I think even though they signed him for 2 years, I think most of them were expecting it to be just one, and especially when they brought all those attacking players over the summer. It's almost like he's trying to say, all right, Liverpool are playing badly and I'm getting the blame for it. And I don't think anyone's really blamed Salah for it.
Yeah, I mean, he might be that he's inferring criticism. I mean, I'm sure one of the reasons why Liverpool are playing so badly is because Mo Salah is playing badly. But I think it's completely unfair to single him out.
Yeah.
Particularly given they still haven't played much better since he was dropped, so...
Well, there is that, yeah. And he's not the reason why Liverpool can't defend. And that seems to be a major problem at the moment. So it does seem very odd. But the problems that Liverpool are having are more indicative of the other things that Salah was talking about. And if it is more widespread than just Salah and Slot not getting on, then Liverpool will have a problem. And it's not going to go away with Salah disappearing off for a month to AFCON, is it?
No, absolutely not. If I was to make any kind of prediction, I would probably suggest that it's just a problem that's going to have to now be addressed upon his return. I'd be very surprised if he left in the winter unless Saudi come in, but you don't see that many big Saudi deals coming around these days, do you?
No,
I think there's a feeling that they've slowed down a little bit. Still looking to build the league, but you know, yeah, not quite making the big sensational deals. They may well have missed the boat there anyway. Yeah, it's difficult. You can understand it. I mean, like, Konate has not had a great season.
No.
He's not been dropped. That's because they don't have enough centre-backs.
Yeah.
But Salah is kind of surplus to requirements. If he's not playing well enough, he can be replaced by someone else. All right, that someone else might not be that good either. But, you know, if that's the direction of travel. And also, you know, I'm sorry, but you've signed a new contract. You're being paid a huge amount of money. You know, the professional thing to do in a situation like this is, if you don't think that you're being treated fairly, and maybe he's done this, but maybe he hasn't, is you request a meeting with your manager and ask him what the problem is and have a conversation and see what's going on. But even still, even if it's like, look, mate, you're not playing that well. You're at an age now. I'm looking to make some changes. I see your role as being a bit more peripheral for while you're here. And that's just how it is. And, you know, you signed a contract and you're being paid handsomely. The professional thing to do is to just, like, do your best and prove the coach wrong. He clearly doesn't see it that way at all. He probably feels he's being singled out, and that is very, very disappointing.
This story is obviously going to unfold over the next 2 or 3 days, and he's not travelled with them to Milan for the Champions League match. So the last chance he has to play for Liverpool before AFCON starts is that home match against Brighton, which is on Saturday at 3 o'clock. I personally think he won't be there for that. I think he'll already be out in Morocco by that time. Egypt have a friendly on Tuesday against Nigeria, I think. He'll definitely be out there for that.
Yeah, the best thing for him to do is to head off there nice and early. And yeah, maybe take the heat out of the situation and see whether or not cooler heads will prevail upon his return.
But hey, we'll all be enjoying the popcorn in the meantime, won't we?
Yes, we will.
What else has been in the news this week? Well, there was the announcement that the next Women's Euros is going to be in Germany, which is great news. Drive over there again, like I did in the summer, over to Switzerland, and go to a lot of familiar grounds. It's going to be at Dortmund and Dusseldorf. Cologne is on the list as well. Great news, isn't it, Terry? That'll be fun for a month over in 2029.
Yeah, there is quite any good news. It's so interesting that I think they almost unanimously voted for Germany. I mean, the other stronger contenders was Denmark and Sweden, which also would have been
fun. That would have been a good
fun.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
I mean, if I'm being honest, that was kind of my preference. I would have really liked to have gone there. I think a Scandinavian Euros in the modern women's football arena would have been really, really good and great for the game up there because it's taken a bit of a back seat. Anyway, that didn't happen. Poland, of course, went for it, which probably on reflection feels more like, we're putting our hand up for this kind of stuff in the hope that we'll get considered in the future for this sort of thing. So I think it's encouraging that Poland wanted to host it, but nobody voted for them to do it. I'm sure they would have been brilliant. And I would have quite enjoyed that, too, because I've never been to Poland. It would have been an adventure. But I am looking forward to Germany because, I've been there quite a few times. You know, and my wife and I are already started to plan our trip and what that looks like. And we were only out in Switzerland for a few days. And we're going to make it a little bit longer this time around.
Cool.
We're going to turn it into our big holiday, I think, and go out there for a while and watch as much as we possibly can because we both had a terrific time in Switzerland. So, really exciting to see, you know, a senior football nation doing that. Germany will host it. Brilliant. They're brilliant at hosting this kind of stuff. And a really, really positive news for the women's game moving forward.
There was some other news in Germany around the same sort of time. Coincidence? Who knows? But the Frauen Bundesliga has accelerated plans, I suppose, or refined plans about breaking away from the DFB. Terry, what's the main details around that?
For some time now, there has been a plan for a new setup for the Frauen Bundesliga to form its own entity, but with the DFB, with the German FA, as a key stakeholder in the new league, but that it would be probably mostly the clubs and then with a significant stake being held by the DFB. Agreements were made, conversations are had. When it came to contract stage, apparently what seems to have happened is that the DFB commitments don't appear to be as much as the clubs are suggesting that it should be or was implied by the DFB during these discussions, that the DFB are not. I assume we're talking money here. I'm assuming the DFB are not bringing in the kind of money that the clubs thought the DFB said that they would be bringing in. And so what they have decided to do instead is to go on without the DFB and to set themselves up as a separate breakaway league. They will still be under the auspices of the DFB. I mean, they're still within the pyramid. I don't think they're outside of football. I just think that they're just going to be running themselves. So it will be more like the WSL currently is, except, of course, that was all done by consent. The new code didn't form itself as a breakaway. This was always part of the roadmap that the FA would cede control and ownership of a league to a third party when the time came. And that is what they have done. This is not what's happening here. This appears to be more hostile than that. And it's interesting to see and try to understand the motivations behind them doing that beyond what they're saying in their press releases, which I will only tell you so much.
I suppose that's the thing with governance and club structure in Germany, because obviously fans of football look to Germany a lot, especially with the ownership models there. And so when you start hearing things like breakaways, and it rings a tiny little alarm bell in the back of my head because I'm thinking, well, I know there's been lots of rumblings in Germany in the men's game about the easing of 50+1. While over here, we're thinking, oh, we should adopt 50+1. There are certain clubs in Germany who are thinking, well, maybe ease off a bit on 50+1 because we can't get any investment here. And I, for one, as soon as I saw this proposal, I thought, well, this is great. Go out on your own. You're getting the money in from the clubs. But what they're going to want in return, or what sort of freedoms are they going to want in return? And especially if they're going to try and get investment from outside the clubs. So what's your feeling on this? Do you think that there is the potential for a play to try to weaken 50+1?
Yeah, I think that's a potential scenario, is that it could be a bit of a 50+1 by the back door. But to what extent what happens in the women's game is in a position to influence what happens in the men's game, I'm not altogether certain. I am thinking back to a few years ago when there was that attempt by private equity to buy a stake in the DFL, or that is to say the DFL attempted to sell some of their rights to private equity. And if you remember, Graham, there were huge amounts of stoppages during the game, boycotts and protests during men's Bundesliga games. And I'm now wondering whether or not maybe that's the play, is that part of what they will be looking to do is actually what they want to do is they want to go to private equity firms and try and bring the investment in that way. Not necessarily as a way out of 50 plus one, but possibly. I think it's also very, very likely that the ownership structures will change away from 50 plus one for the Frauen Games. I don't really fully grasp how, I'm assuming that basically these clubs are really more like divisions within the existing men's club. And I think what the plan, I suspect, is that they are to be clubs in their own right, still part of the club, but somewhat independent. And then that gives them the opportunity, unhindered by the same rules, to go off and do their own thing. And they will justify this, understandably, by saying, you know, this is the women's game, we're massively behind, you know, we don't have the kind of crowds coming in that the men's game have, we don't have the kind of TV contracts coming in. If we're going to build a healthy professional football set up here, we're going to need some external investment. And for that, we need to take a different model. And there will be plenty of people hearing those words who will probably completely agree with that. I'm not one of them, but nevertheless, it's a compelling argument. And you can see why people would do that. My view is, and I've said this, is that you should always assume the worst in these things with these owners, even the Bundesliga ones. They're not saints. You know, they might have a very, very cool ownership model that those of us over here maybe envy, but they're not saints. And, you know, they will happily, if they can, find a way of bringing in additional investment to try and compete with the WSL, which I assume is their aim. And I don't mean compete on the European stage. I mean compete for TV and sponsorship money. Then that's what they will likely to do. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting 2 or 3 years coming up over the next few to see it. I mean, I'm also interested at the moment because Dortmund are also not in this equation, but they are still down in Regionalliga, so fourth, maybe third tier. Be interesting to see whether or not they are knocking on the door of that and whether or not they might be allowed to jump in and join the fun when the time comes.
Yeah, a bit like United did at the start of the WSL. So you could see a bit of that in Germany. But yeah, interesting to watch and see how it goes on over the next couple of years. But hey, we've got a whole weekend of football to watch. Unfortunately, I haven't got any Frauen Bundesliga in here, but you can see that. It's on the DFB Play, I think.
It's on DFB Play?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely, which is available on the DFB Play app. There's also a FAST channel if you're in the UK, and indeed if you're in the US, that you can watch live Frauen Bundesliga. That will probably change in the coming years because a TV deal will be done. But yeah, that is available for you. Listeners, so if you do fancy a bit of Frauen Bundesliga, then avail yourself of it. I saw a Frauen Bundesliga game earlier in the season. I went to see Cologne versus Leipzig. And yeah, it's all good stuff. But yeah, sorry, yes. So I think you were segueing into the box there, weren't you? And I dragged it back to the Frauen Bundesliga.
I was. Well, I never really got us away from there. But... what will we be watching this weekend, I wonder? Well, the schedule this weekend is dominated by a fixture for our absent friend today because it is Sunderland Newcastle on Sunday. That's going to be quite the game of football, isn't it, Terry?
It is genuinely going to be the great game of football. You know, if I'm sure Yanis is listening to this. And in his absence, what I'll say is, well, you know, Sunderland have just, it's been amazing what they're on, you know. I hope that they just stay up. And I don't think we can get anything from this, you know. And I'm playing down massively because that's what he's been doing, isn't it? For the whole season, he's been playing. I mean, they keep, obviously, last Saturday notwithstanding, they keep winning football matches. And Yan keeps insisting that they're rubbish and they could get relegated tomorrow if they're not careful. And so there would have been a lot of that going on, but we both know, and he said, and all the listeners know what it means to Jan and to all Sunderland fans and indeed Newcastle fans for winning this match. So we will all be there getting nervous for Jan, but not as nervous as Jan. That's the best part of it.
Yeah, and other games this weekend, well, we'll be looking more at the lower half of the Premier League. We've got Burnley versus Fulham on Saturday evening, which should be intriguing. Fulham again drop points again. Oh dear! In a game against who was it they were playing at the weekend? Crystal Palace.
That would be fourth placed Crystal Palace.
Fourth placed Crystal Palace.
Placed in December. I just say. It's December and Palace are fourth.
Yes.
It's not like second match day or like last weekend in August, you know, and Palace are fourth. No, it's at a proper time of the season and Palace are fourth. I mean, they'll be 11th after the City game at the weekend. But that's by the by.
Such is the nature of that upper mid-table crazy at the league. Moment. Yeah. Crazy, 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 crazy. If you haven't caught the highlights of Palace versus Fulham, do so, because Harry Wilson's goal is incredible. It's a garbage goal, as it turns out, because it doesn't mean anything, but it was an amazing goal.
Beautiful goal.
Yeah, the sort of thing that Danny Baker would probably have made a video out of brilliant rubbish goals. Goals that were amazing, but didn't actually mean anything.
It meant something at the time, in that moment, because obviously, because it was the equalising goal. But it was amazing. And like, it's the build-up and the finish.
Yeah.
One of the best goals ever scored.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to put too much hyperbole, but I'm serious. It was absolutely immaculate. Immaculate football.
Yes. Well, if you want to see what we think of all the games this weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com and click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe to our Substack, and it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that's all we have time for this week. Next week, we'll be coming back with the advent calendar.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah, our Christmas special next week. But until then, from me, Graeme Sibley, and from Terry DeFelony, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football. Or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Ballon, mein Herr.